And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show,
Monday through Friday,
on the Athletic Podcast Network.
And welcome back. It's another edition of Hoops Adjacent on the Athletic NBA Show. David Aldridge here. We got two in the la today. My man Waz. Waz is in the valley, as always.
Yes, sir. I don't leave Encino, man. Yeah. I might go to Tarzana every now and again, but I don't
Temecula,
really
do you go to Temecula? I understand stuff.
Well, jumps man, off Temecula is way down south, DA. I went there one time. I'm not going to lie to you, man. I've been to Napa, never been to Paso Robles, went to Temecula. Very disappointing. I'm not gonna lie to you, man. The place was a disappointment.
I know. I hear stuff jumps off there, man. You know. So,
man.
And joining us also from the confines near Rose Bowl Central, our man Brad Turner from the LA Times. BT, what up,
man? The D to the A to the D to the N. What's good, brother?
Man, hanging in there, man. Hanging in, man. So,
yeah,
man. Wanted to have you on. Shout out to everybody. We all hurting. Our man Sekou passed on Tuesday. One of the great dudes who ever, you know, covered this league. Friend to everyone. Was just a great person to everybody. Man, you could tell all the social media tributes all the same. Everybody said the same thing. Just a stand-up dude, and man, we're gonna miss him so much, BT and Waz. I mean, he was just one of those guys. You know, I worked with him for 10 years at Turner, and just good people.
Yeah, that was my guy, DA. You know, I first met him when he was in Indiana.
Yeah, covering the Pacers. Yeah.
And at that time, I worked in Riverside covering the Lakers, and you beat him. And instantly you become boys.
Yeah.
I mean, right off the bat. And then once he left to go to NBA TV and NBA.com, I would love to go to Indiana and take a picture of his big old head on the wall.
Yeah, he's immortalized in the press room.
He is. And I'm going to sit there and tell my coach, yo, man, why am I looking at your face right now? This is my computer. Come on, say cool. You don't get that lag. Oh, what's with you, son? Give me a little, son.
He's immortalized. Yeah. They have, I don't know, what, 5 or 6 guys on the wall at the press in the press room.
Yeah, they do.
But it just goes to show you, man, that everybody loved him, man. You know, like he could talk to everybody, man. You know,
yeah, he could. You know,
they loved him in Indiana. They loved him in Atlanta when he covered the Hawks. They loved him on the, you know, people at Turner loved him. You know, just good people. And so I am so devastated for his wife and his kids, man. We send our love to him, and anything that we can do, we will do, because, you know, he had reach, man. Everybody around the league knew him and loved him, because, you know, as I said this on TV last night at NBA TV, you know, Sekou could have been one of these cats that makes it all about himself, because people told him stuff. You know what I mean? Like, he would always know what was going on. You know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? So if he could have said, let me go be a big star and, you know, be the information guy and all that sort of thing. And it just wasn't his vibe, because he would rather have the relationship and the friendship with people, I think, than the scoop. You know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? That's, he was one of those kind of cats, you know? And so, it's just hard, man. It's so hard. And I want to shout out to our man, Art Trish, who was Sekou.
Right.
Him and Sekou were tight, man. And Art was the PR guy, for the Hawks for many years. And again, another good brother. And I know Art's really hurting right now. And we send our love to him, man. Just hope y'all can get through this. It's very tough. It's very difficult. We're in very difficult times. And the odd thing, BT, is, you know, I wanted to have you on, and I hate the word anniversary because it's not appropriate, but it has been a year since Kobe passed. And, you know, that's why I wanted to have you on to talk about what this year has been like for you and for the Lakers. And you covered, you know, you've covered both the Lakers and the Clippers forever. You know everything that's going on out there. And just, I know the Lakers are trying, well, it seems like, I should ask you, I shouldn't say, it seems like they want to, you know, be kind of low key about it. They're not going to do very much, I don't think, to call attention to the fact that it's been a year. But I just wonder what it's been like for you, because, man, you knew Cole very well, covered him for years. And, you know, I'm sure it's been as rough on you as it has been on anybody.
Man, DA, it was so tough. And it became even more difficult when I start calling people to talk to them about that. And one that always stands out is Jerry West. Whenever I talk to Jerry, even last year, and then a couple of weeks ago, about what he remembered about Kobe, you go from being a reporter to being Jerry West's friend to being someone that's consoling Jerry to Jerry consoling you, to both of you guys snipping, basically two grown men crying, sharing stories, and two guys trying to uplift each other. So you a psychologist, because you know how Jerry is, man. Jerry,
I know. He can get to
a dark place really fast. You know, he gets out of it. So we're on the phone for an hour.
Yeah.
And you might ask Jerry three questions, and you know who's going to the moon because he would know the answer to that. I mean, he just knows what's going on around the league, around the sporting landscape. So that was the first conversation I had with him that really, you know, was a tough one, because at the end of the hour conversation, and he goes, Brad, let me tell you something. And that West Virginia voice of his, he goes, now you got me down.
Yeah,
and
when
he said that, I was like, oh, man. I was like, Jerry, I got myself down too, Jerry.
Right.
After that, he laughed about it, but that was the one that started everything for me when I started writing these stories. And
Waz, I don't know if you've ever talked to Jerry, but, and I don't, he's written a book about it, so it ain't no secret. Jerry is the most tortured individual I've ever known in my life.
right.
He's tortured.
That's his reputation.
You know,
that's definitely his reputation.
You know, everybody loves him, but he's a tortured man. You know, like he's dealing with some demons, boy.
And what's crazy is he's had the ultimate success.
Yes,
right.
But it's not enough. He is the logo. It ain't MJ.
It ain't Kobe.
It is not Magic Johnson. The logo is Jerry West.
Right.
And he still can't just...
And he'll deny it. He'll say it's not me. Like, everybody knows it's you, Jerry. What are you talking about?
You say he's tortured. Think about this. When the Lakers won their first championship under Phil Jackson in 2000.
Yeah, I know what you're going to say. I know this story, but go ahead.
Game 6 was at Staples. He couldn't come to the game.
That's right.
The dude drove around L.A., would listen to the game on the radio, and then turn to something else.
Yeah.
He couldn't bear to watch it.
Could not bear to watch it in person. Couldn't bear to listen to it. And then when they win, he's still thinking, oh, shit, we got to do it again. And I
it's unbelievable. Jerry. I wrote a story about it because it was, you know, it was one of those where there was 2 days between game 4 and game 5? Well, I guess it was game 5 and game 6, right? They won in 6 games, right? And they beat Indy. So there's 2 days off. So, of course, everybody calls Jerry West. I mean, you know, because that's the story. The Lakers haven't won, and he's been trying to win forever, and they're on the verge of winning again. And literally, just like Brad said, I was hanging up the phone. I said, okay, Jerry, well, I'll see you Sunday. And he said, no, you won't. And I said, what do you mean? I said, I'm not going to be there.
Oh, my goodness.
It was unbelievable. Like, it was crazy, man. Like, he just is tortured. Like, he's just lost. He lost to the Celtics so much, and he blamed himself. And I'm like, Jerry, you literally averaged 40 points a game. What are you talking about? Like, there's nothing more you could have done, you know? Like...
But BT, I'm curious to know why Jerry was so close to Kobe specifically. I know, like, you know, we all know the story about the secret workouts and the not doing this with other teams and Jerry knowing Kobe was his guy from the start. But why was he so close with Kobe specifically, do you think?
I think part of it, besides what you just mentioned, was when Kobe and Shaquille were having their issues, should I say, mm-hmm. D.A.? They were going at each other, man. They were bickering. They were like, what? Whose team is this? My team? No, it ain't. Right, you right. know, you know, when Shaq was calling him, he was like, Shaq, who is him? You know who him is? Pronounce his name. Kobe would say something in the locker room if somebody had got a rebound. Like, boy, here we go.
Right.
But because of that friction they had, and because Phil Jackson, as DA knows, loved friction in the locker room.
Yes,
he thought that was a kind of cool thing. Well, Kobe would turn to Jerry West, and he would go to Jerry's house, and he would sit down. He would talk with him. He would try to get counsel by him. And Shaquille did too, but it was more of Kobe looking for a mentor to help him through the situation he had going on with Shaquille and also help him understand what it's like to be a superstar in the league. And because they developed that close bond and that friendship, and at that time, Kobe was still living, I want to say, in Palisades. He had not moved to Newport Beach, Newport Coast by that time. Right. So they were close to each other, and because Jerry was such a tortured soul and could never get over his greatness or understand his greatness, think about Kobe. It was never enough to be great. There was always something more out there. And who else to talk about trying to be greater than greater than Jerry West and trying to learn how to accept that than Jerry West. And so they struck up a bond. I mean, the story I wrote about him, that when Jerry says that they had just got a Christmas card from Vanessa, from Kobe's wife, and that when he got it, the first thing he said was, oh my God. And his wife got the Christmas card and she ran out the room and she was crying. So again, that just shows you how strong the bond is, because he's still getting these Christmas cards from Kobe's family.
Let's bring DA into the conversation here.
Welcome to Who
Comma Is
Adjacent on the Athletic Podcast Network.
I turned it on and I heard Shaq with the barbs and it's like the boasting and braggadocio. I was transported right back into it. I was like, oh, this is great.
I think I rap better than Shaq.
David Aldridge.
Oh, he's totally playing. Yes. Yes. And then he got their lungs out in front of everybody on TV.
Michael was not your friend.
It was popping in there.
Rodney Lambert.
So the Chicago and Detroit stuff, that was real.
That was real.
I mean, God forbid we don't have scholarship monies and can't pay for the charters for the water polo in Iowa.
Hoops of
Jason. Welcome to Hoops. 5, 4, we have ignition.
Stay mellow, my friends.
The comma is...
No, they were tight. And, you know, Jerry mortgaged everything to get Shaq, right? You know,
yes.
But I agree with you, BT. I think he was closer personally to Kobe. You know, so it was a business relationship with Shaq, but I think it was more of a personal relationship with Kobe. And I'm also curious about...
And then, you know, Shaq was more of a Phil guy, too. And then there was, of course, the Jerry and Phil situation.
Yeah, well,
so
yeah.
Sad. You know, like it became sort of factional in that sense.
Yeah, and that's a good segue, Wallace, too, because BT, you're one of the few guys that was able to navigate that chasm. Waz, you had to pick one. It was like the Jets and the Sharks. You couldn't be.
Of course.
So Jim Gray was a Kobe guy.
Slick to keep. Yes, he was.
Jim Gray was a Kobe guy. Rick Bucher was a Kobe guy. They did.
Yes.
I was a Shaq guy because Shaq was funny. Because Shaq was funny. That's why I like Shaq, because he was funny. He was entertaining. So you would go to him. I never forget when Alonzo got the big deal and Shaq wanted a bigger deal.
Oh,
And he said, yeah, you can have a Benz or you can have a Beamer. One costs more.
Exactly. Think about that.
So you would go to L.A. and Shaq would say some funny shit like that, and you'd be like, oh, Shaq's my guy. I love that guy. You know?
Yeah. How could you not love the guy?
You know what I mean? But you talk, but Kobe still talked to you, though. He talked to you, and you got Shaq. So you had good relationships still with both of them.
And D.A., it's called tiptoeing around the tulips. And I was tiptoeing around the tulips. One lip was Kobe, one lip was Shaquille. I mean, it was interesting because I love the fact that Kobe worked so hard at his craft, which in turn made me want to be better at what I did, making sure when I asked my questions that I was on point as much as I could be. Yeah. But I also love the idea that Shaquille was warm, friendly, kind, understanding. His situation with me and Shaq was always like, Shaquille, you said you're the most dominant ever. Why don't you don't want to be the best player ever? He goes, what do you mean? And that Shaq voice, I am the best ever. No, you're not. You've already said it. And so he get mad about that, but he didn't stay mad too long. And he goes, maybe you're right. No, hell no, you wrong. You know, and Kevin was going like, see, that's your boy, BT.
Right.
I'm working out. Yes, you are working out, Cole. Big fella, summertime, big fella ain't going to be in the lab.
No, he's not.
He's going to be all rapping, making a movie.
Yeah.
Just kind of like, you know, understanding both guys, trying to navigate it. Because the guys in the locker room, they were grown men. You know, Robert Ory, like, man, that's their problem.
Yeah, right.
And D.A. Robert saying stuff like, shoot, I want more shots, too. I ain't getting no damn shots because I get in the ball on the damn time.
Right.
Well, how about me?
Right.
I was like, Rob, man, you ain't going to play 82 games. What do you mean by that? I said, right. You owe the people money. You ain't going to start playing until April.
Right.
So you owe us like some restitution or something, brother. Because you owe the fans money, man. But to have, you know, Rob there to talk to about it, to have Brian Shaw, to have Harp, to have Derek Fisher, to listen to them, to try to understand how they felt about it, always made it a balancing act. And it made it fun because there were great stories. It was before social media.
Right.
So they talked. They talked to the media, and it did not come out until the very next day.
Right. It was beautiful.
Yeah, it was.
So what do you think? I mean, I got to ask you, what do you think now? Shaq's getting killed because he goes on, he's on Turner every week killing guys, and guys are like clapping back at him. What do you think? I mean, I'm going to defend Shaq because I know what Shaq believes in a certain style of basketball.
Yeah.
But I understand. I can understand the young guys saying, well, what? I mean, can't we have our moment? I understand that. I understand both sides. What do you think?
You know, well, that's a real tough one because Robert Ory and I talk a lot. He lives out here in Glendale and he's on.
He's on the broadcast. Yeah.
So he and I talk a lot. He'll say stuff like him and James would watch games and him and James Worthy. And they're like, man, it wasn't like that when we played. And then, so he'll ask me because I'm a little bit old. I say, you know what? I've learned to take a step back from that and try to understand what the younger guys are talking about. But then again, I'm around them much more than they are. They're in the studios. It's just like me understanding now the younger journalists, the younger brothers involved in this. They know more about doing this Skype stuff and social media and TikTok. I ain't going to TikTok a top tick for nobody. Because that's just not for me to do. And I understand that. So I try to keep an open mind about what Shaquille is saying and also why the guys want to clap back. Now, Shaq, to his part, he might say this is entertaining. Well, we know how Shaquille is. Yeah. He's serious about these comments he's been making about, you know, I mean, Mitchell is damn good. And that's a bold comment to make, but what are you going to do? He ain't going to do nothing to it because he thinks he is that dude. Has the game changed? Yes, it's changed. It's always changed. It always has. It probably will again in some form or fashion. I don't mind him doing that because now it puts those players on notice that you're not doing enough. You can do more. And the ultimate goal is to win an NBA championship. So until James Harden gets one, Shaquille will be at his head. Until they get a championship in Utah, Shaq is going to be on young fellow's head. Is it too hard, too rough for our generation, DA, Big Wise? Nah, it ain't like that. Look, we grew up, we got whoopings.
Whoopings.
That's a fact.
Not a whoopings, whoopings.
Yes, now, plural.
It's a timeout.
Right.
And you timeout know, used to be 20 minutes, now it's 5 minutes.
And here's right.
And you know why I'm with Shaq on this one? And I'm speaking to somebody who, personally, I love Donovan Mitchell. I love the type of character that he displays as a star in our league. I love his game. But the bottom line is, especially for somebody like Shaq, who did play with a Kobe, a young Kobe, who did play with a young D-Wade. I get it. These are lions of the game. Somebody like me, who is a huge fan of Donovan Mitchell, I don't think he's gotten to that level yet. I don't think he's gotten to D-Wade in 06 yet. Not even to speak of D-Wade at 09, right? Yeah, I don't think he's reached that level. And I think he has the potential to be somebody who is that great, right? So I don't have a problem with Shaq specifically, who has been that great, right?
Yes, like he has.
Who has been the reason why a team three-peated, right? Like a main catalyst of a three-peat team. I don't mind Shaq saying that because specifically Donovan Mitchell. Like, I think Donovan Mitchell is great, and I don't think it's wrong for us to expect greatness of him. Yeah. You know, like, I think that's what Shaq is saying. I don't have a problem with that. And I also didn't have a problem with him getting that Rudy Gobert. Mm-hmm. The bottom line is Shaq had to average 30 to get that contract he got from the Lakers, then to get extended by the Heat for another 100 mil, right? Yeah. Like, he had to win 3 championships to do that. He had to prove himself at the highest level. David Robinson, Hakeem Olajuwon, Patrick Ewing. This is what Shaq had to do.
Right.
So I understand his perspective as somebody who was a great player and sees somebody else like, yo, you have the potential to be great. You have the potential to be what I was in 2002 playoffs or 2001 playoffs. You have that potential maybe to go 15-1 in a damn playoff, win the finals MVP, brother. Let me see that out of you. Dude. I don't see anything wrong with this, guys. Dude. And I think, I think it's just about expectation.
He just... Kemba Mutombo was the defensive player of the year.
I was doing the same thing.
He destroyed him. He destroyed him in the finals.
You had to call. Come on now. You had to call Child Protective Services for Dikembe.
Dikembe said something about Shaq, like, play me like Sega Genesis.
Right.
You know? And so Dikembe is like the top, said something bad about Shaquille that pissed him off. They said, Shaq was 40 and 20.
Oh my God.
15 dunks. And Dikembe goes, he is a monster.
He's like a refrigerator. I remember him saying he's like a refrigerator with speed. You know what I mean? I worked at Turner. I'm going to defend people on Turner. Big surprise there, right? So, you know what I mean? Like, so I get it. It's like you don't want to hear from your uncle. Boy, what you doing? Why are you doing that, boy? You shouldn't be doing that. You know, you don't want to hear from your grandfather saying that to you. And I'm sure that's how they're taking it. And I can understand them saying, oh, old man, you couldn't play today. The hell he couldn't play today. You know what I'm saying?
Boy, Big Fella be 40 and 20 every night.
Oh, nice. It would be unfair. Lies. You know what I mean?
Shaq in a 4-out offense where he's just the role guy.
Yeah.
Or guys have to defend him 1-on-1 in the paint. It's not happening for you. No. You're done. Dead.
Now, you can shoot all the threes you want.
Able to jump out to the 3-point line. By the way, because people make that argument, like, could Shaq play in space? Again, Rudy Gobert just got $200 million for defense.
Right.
And he's not somebody who plays in space. So now imagine Shaq averaging 30.
Right.
Still being a force down there defensively.
Right.
But like, what are we even talking about here? Like, bring Shaq up.
Think about this, Big. How about this, though? So now you shoot threes. He doesn't step out a whole lot. After a while, when you get brutalized and get an elbow and the chops and a butt in your rib cage, those three gonna come up short. Because your ass is tired from what? Getting dragged down low.
Remember how guys used to just foul out? Like, you're just fouling out. You don't even get to stay on the court.
Right, but this in mind as well, guys. Shaq bulked up because he had to, right? Like, he had to get big to play against big men. Now, imagine skinny Shaq when he was with Orlando. When he had size, when he had the size and the speed, he would play like that all the time now. He wouldn't have had to gain 80 pounds to deal with the pounding. There would be no pounding. You know what I mean? It would be, oh my God. Wait, are you kidding?
Montrezl Harrell would give Shaq probably
the pain. Are you kidding me? Jesus.
Man, I'm a Trez fan, but Trez would be, instead of Montrezl Harrell, it'd be Montrez. Because it'd just be too much to deal with.
No, come on now. No, y'all need to look at some tape. Seriously.
I get it. And people are always talking about, we need our guys to be cheerleaders for the league. I mean, dude, I think inside, and I'm not going to talk about nobody else's product,
right?
But inside, as a studio show, does it better than everybody.
Yes.
And it's not close. So this idea that we're going to criticize the inside product as compared to the others is ridiculous.
Well,
people tune in to watch them talk about our league.
Yeah.
Well,
I'll just say this. One show got all the damn Emmys. Okay. So you tell me. You tell me.
Just on a quality standpoint, if people want to get all dorky about it, about they don't know about win shares and the VORP and shot charts and data, and like, all right, cool. You can levy that criticism, but you can't tell me they don't make a quality, entertaining NBA product.
I'm fine. Look, seriously, no BS. If somebody wants to do a show that's all about advanced analytics and we're gonna do games based on the analytics, hey, look, the marketplace will decide. I'm fine with that.
Yeah, right.
If somebody wants to put that on TV, I'm fine with that.
And I'd watch it, by the way.
Right, I would watch
but
it too.
You can't tell me what Chuck and Shaq and Ernie and Kenny are doing isn't great.
Now I will say this. It's disrespectful not to know somebody's name.
Okay, yes.
And it's disrespectful not to know where somebody's from. You need to do a minimum amount of preparation. That's all I'm saying. Minimum. But other than that, again, you can dismiss it because I work there, and that's fine. People will. Some people will, but I look, the proof's in the pudding. That show's been on 20 years. What is there another show that's been on 20 years covering the league? You know what I mean? Like, so
not that I know of.
You know what I mean?
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So BT, let's get it contemporary. You are Lakers Central now.
Yes.
How are they? They seem to be rolling pretty well. What would you say there? What's going well, and what do you go? They need to tighten that up a little bit.
Well, what's going well is LeBron James. Okay, Anthony Davis, LeBron James. I mean, bruh, that brother right now is balling. And I saw something Jared Dudley put on Twitter that LeBron James has to be considered the leading candidate for the MVP award. And I thought about that for a second, and I thought to myself, I have to agree. It might be because I see him play all the time, and what I see is sustained, DA, sustained excellence year after year. So you have to put him up there. So we'll start with that, and obviously having, I don't want to call AD as Batman. I'll call AD LeBron's 1A. Yes. I don't want to put them in the same category as Shaquille and Kobe, because that was a different sort of dynamic. Yeah. But the two of them make this work incredibly well. And they're just a lot to deal with. If there was one thing I would say you have to kind of be like, oh, about with them, is sometimes it appears they get bored during the course of a game. You know what I mean? Think about that.
It happened in Cleveland.
And LeBron says, AD, how about this, DA? He claims someone from the Capitol front office said something to him, got him a little pissed off.
So they saying that's Kobe Alton, BT. They put
some Michael. That's some Michael shit right there. That's some Michael shit right there.
Thank you, DA. That's what I said. Cleveland, they scored like, 17, 19 the first quarter?
Right. I took that personally.
Right. And they're going like, oh, you ain't doing nothing. Oh, really? All right. So I'm going to drop 20-some more, 21 in the fourth, and we're going to beat y'all. They have a tendency, I think, to get a little bored out there when they're playing. They did it against Golden State before they left Staples. They were up 19 in the first quarter. They were having a good time. And they ended up losing the game because they couldn't get it back. If they were even trying really hard to get it back, they were kind of thinking like, oh, we'll get this. We got it.
We'll figure it out in the last 2 minutes.
Yeah. Then they go up 12 in the fourth quarter. And then all of a sudden, you know, Steph hit a three. And Wiggins hit, I think, at least 2 threes from the corner. He had missed the next one. it's a close game. LeBron had bailed us out. Next thing you know, last shot. Oops, miss, lost.
Man. BT, I want to ask you, because from afar it feels like, you know, as somebody like me who's been paying attention to LeBron basically since he got into the league, there have been times in the past where you could tell he was less than impressed by his teammates. specifically the last Cleveland run, like the year without Kyrie or whatever, the first Cleveland run, and probably the last team that he had in Miami. And then, of course, the baby Lake. Like, you could just tell sometimes when LeBron's like, what do you guys want me to do with this? Right?
Yeah.
Whereas this year, I feel like LeBron has the ultimate confidence in the guys who are around him. Like, it just feels like he believes in these dudes. Is that the sense that you get?
You know, it is. And I think it started last season. And it just got even stronger, obviously, after Kobe passed away, because now they had to lean on each other and had to depend on each other. But what I've sensed this year for sure is that they have a bona fide number three scorer in Dennis Schroeder.
Right.
They have a damn good defender and three-point shooter in Wesley Matthews. Marcus Gasol is not the player he was 10 years ago. But his basketball IQ is so high. Mm-hmm. His passing is so
high. Him and LeBron already have so much chemistry on the back cuts and the they already got a mind meld going on.
They really do. So you add all those things together, and now KCP is starting
can't
to
miss.
You can't miss, man. Mm-mm. And Caruso, as they in LA, they call him the Caruso. they call Contavious Call, we're poor, Contavious Call, you know, I mean, they just. And they're making it work, but one guy who's helped with this, I think, is Jared Dudley, because he's not afraid to tell AD and LeBron what they're doing wrong, even in film sessions. And because they respect him so much in his basketball IQ, they're going like, you know, I don't know about that. He goes, no, look at the film. Yeah. Ron, you missed that assignment, right? So either I'm lying or the field's lying, or we both lying. All right, you're right. And the other players are going like, yeah, Ron. And so then he'll recognize that, okay, fine. And then the little things that Jared does, if they're on the road, like last year, and they want to have dinner somewhere, and he'll go like, I got this. I'll set it up. You just come to dinner. And you hear LeBron in the locker room going, yo, man, can I get a steak? Andy, what you going to get? Yo, man, what you going to get tonight? Like a little kid. And, man, don't forget the wine.
Right.
Don't forget, you know, got to have this wine. Mm. So little things like that, having that veteran that he's always had around him. Now, these 2 years, it's been Jared Dudley. That's helped. Having Jason Kidd there as an assistant coach, who he played, on the Olympics with, D.A.?
Yeah.
His respect there. I have to give Frank Vogel a lot of credit for really being, I want to say, a player's coach and someone that's willing to listen.
Yeah.
Yes, LeBron has run every team he's been on, so the saying goes, and I'm sure he's running the Lakers, so the saying goes. But shit, if I was coaching him, he can run things too.
Right.
And get me a ring. Like, and look, Ty Lue is my boy. That's my dude. I've known Ty Lue since he was a rookie in the NBA. And right. I would always call, say, yo, man, what's that called supporting LeBron? It'll be like playing with Kobe and Shaq.
Mm-hmm.
this is some good shit, dog. Right. It's like, my bad.
You can go places with him.
Yes, you can. Big wise, I'll say this also. As you get older, you start to reflect on your life and you start to learn more things. And then he has kids. Mm-hmm. So he's got to deal with kids. He's obviously has a wife, but having kids around you makes you think a little bit differently.
Yeah.
And so you respect people more because now you have a better understanding of what they have gone through, what their life experiences have been like, and how you can have an influence on them and an impact on them. And I always like to say, for athletes, once they get to be about 30 years old, you start to see a dynamic shift in not only their skill set, but in the people that they become, because they're learning more. They're out of that 20 age. And that can be said for anyone. When you're a teenager, man, we're wild, you're crazy, your hormones are out of this world. You're in your 20s, you're at every club, you're at a party. You get to be about 30 years old, you start thinking, hey, man, the future is, I got to get this right. I mean, yeah. I won't be doing this very long. So I think he's learned that. And, you know, for me, it's just been amazing to be around him, to talk to him, to listen to him. You hear his voice, and just to get the, you know, idea that he respects what we do is a beautiful thing because so many guys don't.
Yeah.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. LinkedIn Sales Navigator is a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals, and show you hidden allies so that you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you the most up-to-date first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/NBAshow23. That's linkedin.com/NBAshow23 for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/NBAshow23 and get started.
So, we want to not rap, but you know, I want to get back to Kobe for a second, just in the sense that I feel like people don't people tend to put him in one or two boxes, like either he's this saint-like figure or he's the devil incarnate, and I don't think anybody is that. I think we're all kind of complicated and twisted in our own way, right?
Right.
But again, you were around him more than anybody. I mean, what would you say if somebody said, what was Kobe like? What would you tell them?
Man. Ooh. No, from the time I met him at 17, when he played in the summer league at Long Beach State, before they were always in Las Vegas, up until his death, the word I would keep using with him is he was always evolving. And he continued to evolve and become a better person who learned, who listened, who helped. But the evolution of him was just amazing to see. I mean, D.A., the last time I saw him was when they played the Dallas Mavericks.
Right.
And I was walking in the back area going back to the press room, and I kind of see someone out of the corner of my eye with this little, well, this young lady, a young girl, and I get closer, and it's Kobe with Gianna. Mm. And he's bending over and looking at her and looking at me at the same time, kind of smiling. And he walks up, he goes, G, see this dude right here? When he covered me, he never dressed this short. I was like, Kobe, stop it. My face clean. You know I'm always mean when it comes to the threat. my fist is what's up, bro. Come on, man. So you start laughing. He goes, you're right, B. And it was just that moment where I thought back to our conversations quite often were about clothes.
Yeah.
When it
yeah.
was about hoops and about wine.
Yeah.
And that was a moment that you obviously don't forget because it was the last time I saw him.
Mm.
And it was just, and that was the new, different Kobe Bryant with his daughter sharing a lab with someone that had known him since he was 17 years old.
Yeah.
So my word is Kobe Bryant was always evolving.
Man, so very, very related to that, BT, like, you know, I moved to L.A. in 2017 from New York City, right? And there really is no example from my upbringing of a relationship between a city, a fan base, and an athlete, right? Like, maybe Derek Jeter and the Yankee fans, like, maybe. And I don't know that it's like that because I think the Mets and Yankees dynamic in New York is a little bit more equal, although obviously the Yankees are the Kings, then Lakers, Clippers, like there's just no comparison whatsoever. So I don't even know that you can even compare it to that. But I say all of that to say, like, you know, coming to LA and understanding the devotion, the just emotion that Kobe was able to stir up within the people of the city and the fan base and the closeness to him. Like, did Kobe have an appreciation for that? Like, from what you know, did Kobe understand what he meant and what he continues to mean to these people? Like, I know that's something hard for people to wrap their minds around, but it felt so intense being here, understanding how people feel about Kobe. I wonder if Kobe had any grasp whatsoever on what that was.
Big Wise, the answer to that question is yes.
Mm.
Last year, when LeBron was closing in on catching Kobe to be with the third all-time leading scorer,
right.
My coworker, Bill Plasky, calls and goes, hey, man, do you know that I can get in contact with Kobe? I was like, here's the info. I mean, it's Plasky, and Kobe knows him. And Plasky just wrote some of that conversation again where Kobe said to him something along the lines of, this city watched me grow up from a boy into a man and into a father. He goes, I'm paraphrasing here, but basically goes, I can't thank this city enough for accepting me and for loving me and embracing me. He's basically like how he's blown away how a city could take him in and still more or less love him the way they do. And he would be forever grateful for that. So, yes, he understood that. He was prideful that people felt that way about him. He couldn't really get over it. Like, man, you know, almost like, why me? I mean, I'm not perfect by no means. I have flaws. I have my ups and my downs, but I keep working at this. I'll try to get better. But the city of Los Angeles, Southern California has accepted me, and for that, I will be forever grateful. So, yes, he did. He understood that.
That's awesome.
Man, that's great. That's great. BT, my man. This has been great. And we're supposed to do the questions this week, but we'll wait till next week on that. I will try to work those in next week. This was too good. Man, thank you. Thank you for everything with this, man. It's been a tough week for all of us. I appreciate you hanging with us and breaking it down like you have. LA Times, Brad Turner, the man. Anything about LA, the Clippers or the Lakers, you need to read him first. Appreciate you, boy. Thank you. Love
man.
You.
Man. DA, appreciate you. Love you, brother. Big Wise, it's a pleasure, man.
Yo, appreciate you, man. We need more of that crawfish energy on this show. It's different. The gumbo energy is different, man.
If DA calls, I'm jumping.
There you go.
I love you.
Man, well, appreciate all of y'all listening, and we'll do it again. We'll bring the questions next week. We'll carry them over, and we'll do a big segment on the questions, all right? No stupid questions. Everybody take care of yourself. Later.
All right. Peace, y'all.
Thank you.
All righty. That was great, BT.